Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in, clicking on for Reaching New Heights with Troy Bell, the city manager, city of Muskegon Heights, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know. Again, much appreciation to all the comments and questions that have come in between shows, and I really welcome the opportunity to be able to answer questions, receive questions, and be able to generally interact with people in the community who have concerns or questions. And to the one, everyone is passionate about this community, which is what I love about Muskegon Heights. And so if you do have questions between shows that you don't get a chance to ask during the show, or you want additional clarification, always feel free to contact us at City Hall. That number is 733-8870. Again, 231-733-8870. Or you can feel free to send me an email at T as in Tango, B as in Boy, E as in Elephant, L as in Larry, L as in Larry, tbell at muskegonheights.us. So I always welcome feedback and input from the community. So keep it coming. Today I have a special guest with us as part of our Up with Tiger Pride small business spotlight, Ms. Moore from Reed Muskegon. So I want to welcome her to the show today to do our spotlight. So thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to come on to the show. So I'm going to torment you with a few updates for the community, and you might have some that you might want to throw in there. So, and then we'll go into getting to know a little bit more about you, your organization, and what you're doing.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Troy.
You're very welcome. So in terms of updates, we have a council meeting, a special meeting for this Saturday at City Hall beginning at 9 a.m. And that meeting is intended for multiple things, but specific to the mayor, it is for an opportunity for the community to engage with, and specifically council, to engage in conversations around how to generate more revenue in the city of Muskegon Heights. And this goes back to the conversations that I've had in multiple shows about the fact that we're in a structural deficit in Muskegon Heights, and understanding that we have more expenses than we have revenue, and we are pretty much to the bone in terms of expenses. What do we do to address the other side of the equation, which is revenues? And I'm sure you've heard me talk about it over and over on this show, and I'm going to keep talking about it because I think it's important for everybody to understand the challenges that we have in order to provide the basic services that most communities provide. First and foremost in many people's minds is road, potholes, the road conditions. And that is an issue that is part of our structural deficit. So I won't go into that right now, but the meeting on Saturday is slated as a discussion to around how to develop more revenue in Muskegon Heights, and also put together some strategies around how the council wants to move forward in the remaining part of the year and years to follow. And then that meeting is followed on Monday, the next Monday, with our regular council meeting. A reminder, our council meetings are on the second and fourth Monday of the year, of the month. second and fourth Monday of every month. If we have five Mondays, then there's a gap. So just remember, second and fourth Monday of the month. The second Monday of the month, we generally have a workshop, which is focused on introducing new ideas, legislation, and workshopping those ideas, asking questions, doing a deeper dive in it. And then the fourth Monday is usually considered our business session, where we take those things that were addressed in the previous meeting and vote on those items for final vote. That's not to say that council doesn't have the authority to make a final vote in either meeting. That's just generally in practice how we separate the things that we do on the second Monday from the things that we do on the fourth Monday. But any duly called and noticed meeting of council is a meeting where action can be taken, permanent action can be taken. So this meeting coming up on Monday is our fourth Monday. Because this is usually our business session, it will not be just a business session this meeting because we didn't have quorum at our last meeting. And so the agenda for our workshop has been duplicated for this meeting since we didn't have an opportunity to go through that. Now, I invite everybody to come out and participate in that meeting. We have some great presentations. We have a presentation coming from Every Woman's Place. We have a proclamation for women in construction. And we also have a presentation concerning the reclassification of Peck Street. So those are some things that I think the community will find interesting. And so please feel free to come in to City Hall, or you can log on and view the meeting via Zoom. If you need the Zoom link, you can go to our website at the city and get that link and be able to participate virtually in the meeting. So just a few other pointers about the flow of the meetings. Generally, in the beginning of the meeting, we have an opportunity for the community to comment on items that are on the agenda. And so that's at the beginning of the meeting before the actual items are discussed by council. So that gives the community a chance to weigh in on these issues before council considers them and potentially votes on them. And then we have a section at the end of the meeting for public comment that is for commentary on things that are not on the agenda. So at the end of the meeting, after we've taken care of all of the pertinent business, we provide an opportunity for people in the community to come in and talk about other things or additional things, things that are not on the agenda. So just understand that flow of the meeting. So if you do have a comment, decide, look at the agenda, decide, is this an item that is on the agenda? And if so, be prepared at the beginning of the meeting, whether you're on Zoom or in the audience. And if you have something that's not on the agenda, hold that for commentary at the end of the meeting. I want to remind everybody that the reason why I'm wearing this wonderful scruff is part of the Beards for Books campaign. And I thank everybody for helping me meet the original goal, but we still have a couple of weeks left. And so I'm hoping that we can double that original goal, because this is a great opportunity for us to be able to provide books for children in our community that that desperately need the opportunity to read. And I think Melissa has some commentary on that that she'll probably add when we get into our spotlight. The NFBPA conference, a reminder, is March 30th to April 3rd. NFBPA is the National Forum for Black Public Administrators. If you missed this last week, just a little background on that organization. It's a national organization of public administrators of color. And they are going to be in Grand Rapids every year. They hold a national forum, their annual meeting. And this year, we're happy to welcome them and host them in Grand Rapids at the Amway Grand. I say we, it's not specifically the city of Muskegon Heights, but the region is hosting them here in Grand Rapids. And I'm a former member of the board there, and so I'm excited to have that organization on our doorstep to see the wonderful things that the West Shore has to offer. Even though Grand Rapids technically wants to be part of the West Shore, but we'll give them some grace on that. But yes, we'll be in town, and it's a wonderful organization. You'll see city managers like myself from communities all across the country, including cities like Dallas and Los Angeles and Tacoma, Washington, and Austin, Texas. Some of the major cities across the country that you may not have known have city managers that are African-American men and women. So It is a great opportunity to be able to participate in the workshops and the events there and have a good time. And I strongly encourage you to take advantage of signing up for that conference. You can go to the website at nfbpa www.nancyfrank.org. That's N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, B as in Bravo, P as in Papa, A as in Alpha.org. And you can find the link for the forum there. April 1st is our cleanup. Reminder, be ready to move your vehicles off the terrace and onto the street. We will be ticketing and towing vehicles that are in the yard. You cannot park your vehicle in the grass. It has to be on a driveway, a hard surface, and that driveway has to be adjacent to a curb cut. So you can't drive over the curb to a driveway. It has to have a driveway that is cut into the road, connected to a driveway, or in a garage. So if you do not have a driveway, then you need to be on the street. If you do not have a curb cut, then you need to be on the street, or you will be ticketed and towed. Also, the leaf pickup and yard waste pickup begins again on April 1st. So be prepared to clean up your yards and get that stuff out to the curb. If you have leaves and leaf bags that have been out there through the winter, be prepared to be cited, because when Republic comes by to pick up the trash and the yard waste, if they go to pick up a bag and it breaks and you have leaves all over the ground, that is something that can and will be cited. So make arrangements with DPW to either have them come pick it up or take it down to DPW or rebag them. It's up to you, but we want to make sure that we have a clean finish this year. Ironically, we want to start off this year with a clean finish. so we are really pressing that. You'll see billboards going up and postcards going out about coming together, banding together to create a beautiful Muskegon Heights. We're still waiting for the demolition to begin in Sherman and Peck. So that is pending, still in progress. So be prepared to any effects or impacts that might have on traffic at that intersection, which is one of our major intersections. And of course, I finish off with houses. We got to build new houses. And we've had a tremendous response to people who have called in to sign up to be considered for purchasing one of these new homes. We will be putting out new drawings, sample drawings of what those homes will be in this next week, proposed to look like this next week. So you'll have an opportunity to see it, ask questions about it, dream about it, and get in line to be one of the first people to purchase one of the first homes that has been built in Muskegon Heights since 2004. 18 years since we built a new home. Now, we did have three homes that were built off of Peck, which were the HUD homes. But in terms of a development of significant numbers, not since 2004. I think that was when Woodcliffe completed. So I'm excited, and I'll be excited for the person who is fortunate enough to be the purchaser of one of the first of those homes. And we're starting off with four or five here along the Hackley Corridor. And then that area eventually to get to 17, but ultimately our goal is to get to 250 homes in 5 years, 50 homes every year for 5 years. So be a part of that, because that is a way that we can reclaim the sustainability of our community. So that's all I have for updates right now. Oh, there was one thing I wanted to remind everybody that the Guns Program is doing an event at Mona Lake on June 11th and June 12th. So that wasn't on our original calendar, and we're still working up the calendar of events for the year. Excited about that. We had a great meeting today with the Muskegon Heights Business Association, wonderful organization that's coming together, and we're hoping to partner with them on many, many projects, which is one of the segues to Melissa's spotlight here. But I also want to remind you that Juneteenth is scheduled to be a big celebration, the 17th, the 18th, and 19th down at Mona Lake. And then be ready for Street Fest in the month of August, every Friday evening in the month of August, downtown on Peck Street between, I'm sorry, on Broadway between Peck Street and Baker Street. So we'll be shutting down the street and bringing food out and beverages and live entertainment. So I'm excited about that. And of course, we have coming back is the Festival in the Park. And then Buy Black Weekend. And then we've got in May, the month of May, Kaya Thornton at the US Cafe. So we've got a lot of exciting stuff coming. And when May hits, we're going to be in full swing. So be ready. So with that, I'll stop and let's go to Rise with Tiger Pride with Melissa Moore at Reed Muskegon. So thank you for joining the show again. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, Melissa, and how you came to be in the position you're in with Reed Muskegon, and then tell us about what Reed Muskegon is.
Sure. Well, I don't get asked about my background very often, so I'll have to figure out how to summarize that. I actually have a master's degree in painting, which, you know, totally prepared me to be the director of a nonprofit organization. But started
left, brain, left brain.
Yeah, exactly. It's creative thinking. I always say I use it every day. Yes. But, you know, I have a background. I've worked in nonprofit management development for almost 30 years now. Wow. Started by just looking for a job and needed something to do to help raise my family, became just addicted to the work of nonprofits and creating community change, social change around several different issues. When my family and I moved to Michigan, I was raised in Illinois, but was living in New Hampshire at the time. After I was here a few years, the opportunity opened up for Reed Muskegon for me to work at Reed Muskegon as they were hiring their first ever executive director. At that point, it was small, all volunteer run. It was a part-time job, great for me while I was raising my kids. But I didn't have a big background in literacy. My background was in youth development and other types of nonprofit program management. But as soon as I started to understand the depth of the illiteracy crisis, I'll call it, in our country, and how much needed to be done in Muskegon County, because we cover all Muskegon County, I was like, you know, we've got to grow the organization. I can't just be a part-time employee doing this because it fits in well with my lifestyle. I have to be committed to being part of creating long-term change. And so I've been at Reed Muskegon almost 9 years now. Five of those have been from our home in downtown Muskegon Heights on Broadway. And it's been an amazing home for us. We've been really welcomed by the community. As I said at our meeting this morning, we are proud to serve all of Muskegon County from Muskegon Heights and be a reason for people to come in and visit Muskegon Heights who might not have any other reason to drive down Broadway. So that's kind of how I ended up here. And to give the quick summary of who Reed Muskegon is today, we are the countywide literacy hub, meaning that we provide programs, both early literacy programs to help parents, caregivers, grandparents, foster parents who have 0 to 5 year olds, help make sure those kids have books, as you were saying, and experiences that help them be ready for school. Because we know if our little guys aren't ready when they enter kindergarten, they're already behind if they don't have some of those early literacy skills. And then that's really hard for them to catch up. We know COVID really impacted both our young ones in their ability to socialize and gain those skills and what's happening in our schools. So we do a lot of family literacy around early literacy. Our specialty really is in working with low literacy adults. And I don't think people understand, again, the depth of what this issue is in our country right now. But 43 million adults in the United States read below a third grade level. 43 million. It's about 1 in 6 in Muskegon County. That's over 23,000. And over half of the adults in our country read at an eighth grade level or below. And it's really hard to get a job today at that kind of reading level because it's so connected to technology, to being able to, you know, read, you know, pretty complex instructions, communication skills, all of that stuff. It's hard to manage your finances. Certainly have hard to have managed through the pandemic if you want to get a low level and understand all of that health information. So
I would say that that's extremely important, because even from a personal level like mine, I was diagnosed with extreme dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
Or not for the fact that my mother was an English teacher, was a special education teacher, I would have never made it out of kindergarten. And so that was a blessing to me, that I know that a lot of other folks reach adulthood and never have somebody to recognize that, realize that, or work with them to be able to work through those situations. So
And it takes a lot of individualized attention, because dyslexia impacts everybody differently. So you really have to find out with that one individual, what are the tools that work? And that's one of the things we really specialize in, because there are a lot of adults who, like you said, didn't get diagnosed. They didn't get the attention that they needed. It's tough for a teacher to provide that individualized, you know, attention in school.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, the rate of dyslexia in our incarcerated individuals in our country is almost double the national average. I can't remember the statistic. I haven't looked at it for a while, because we know that low literacy is also linked to incarceration. Mm-hmm. Because when you don't read well, if you struggled from like a young age to try to read and you have dyslexia or something else where you're not getting the help you need, you're more likely to drop out of school, find other ways to make an income.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so so we do a lot of work in the jail with reentry. COVID kind of impacted that. We work at KPEP, also trying to help individuals that are reentering our community from incarceration, make sure they've got you know, as much support as possible around that. We do programs for adults who don't speak English as their native language. Actually, mm-hmm. not far from where you're at right now at Mahali, we do our class there twice a week. We're just trying to do everything we can to bring program to where individuals already are. So mm-hmm. it could be through one-on-one tutoring. We're trying to reopen some drop-in programs at Michigan Works, at some mm-hmm. of our adult education facilities, some of the churches. We're trying to build, you know, stronger partnerships with our churches. So
now, when you say drop-in programs, explain that for our audience.
Sure. So we call them lit labs, but it's basically drop-in tutoring. And it means that, say, you've got a document, you know, something from the city, an ordinance, you know, whatever it happens to be, a lease, healthcare information, and you're struggling to understand what's on that piece of paper and you need some help getting it filled out in that moment, mm-hmm. you could come to drop-in tutoring, bring that with you, and we could help you through that and make sure that in that moment your need gets met. Mm-hmm. We can also do longer term things if you're interested, again, specifically in health literacy or financial literacy. We'll have a toolbox of things there we could pull from that may have, you know, commonly used documents or samples of things that could be used. And a lot of times people who come to our drop-in programs will then transition into more individualized, you know, tutoring and longer term things like that. But mm-hmm. We're hopeful that we'll have a couple of those. I know we're talking to the clubhouse over on Peck Street and a couple of local churches about getting those set up again now that, you know, the COVID numbers have gone back down. So
it's beautiful stuff. I don't know if you know about my background, because I spent time in education and ended up working as a superintendent out west. And so I've shared with the listeners here before how important it is to be able to provide educational opportunities outside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, the data tells us that inside the classroom, in a school setting, you can move the needle in terms of student performance 25%. But 75% of the learning opportunity occurs outside of the doors, outside the grounds of the school. And the things that we do, whether it's pop-ins or drop-ins, to be able to engage with people with, you know, public pedagogies or curriculums out in the community, really are where we can make the biggest impact on learning and education.
Yep. So, and I think so much of the focus is on the children in school, which is important because we need to focus on them. But I think it's important for everyone to realize that if that child goes home to a home where the parent or grandparent or whoever they're living with struggles to read, they're losing out on all of this learning support, which again, really impacted them during COVID. when they were having to learn from home.
Oh,
so
yes.
we will go wherever we are welcome, mm-hmm. and try to work to provide ways to integrate literacy into things that are already happening. We've talked right. about working with churches and figuring out how to turn a Bible study into a way to, mm-hmm. you know, to do literacy development, because that's a place that people
that
show up.
Literally is a good book. Yep. It's not a good book. Yeah, it was my biggest struggle to try to find ways to get into the home, because mm-hmm. it's there that you can impact the parents, the guardians, the student that may have dropped out of school, as well as the one that's still in school. But being able to reach into the community, into the home, was my biggest challenge as a superintendent. So finding creative ways to do that, like what you're doing, is fantastic.
Sure.
And I still remember the old concept of the bookmobile. I don't know mm-hmm. where that is today.
The Mattel has one. They have a new bookmobile. And if you're doing it like for the Friday night festivals in August, I yep. bet you they would bring it down. They would probably
that would
really
be fabulous.
Excited to park it right in the middle of Broadway.
Right. That would be awesome. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Well, now that you've given us a little bit about the background, I want you to share with our audience about the new program that you shared this morning with Mesquite Heights Business Association. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, I am too. I've been, you know, as soon as I was introduced, this program is called, the national model is called Family Service Learning. Mm-hmm. It was developed by the National Centers for Family Learning, which mm-hmm. is based in Louisville, Kentucky. And they have been doing this work for about a decade. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. They're doing the evaluation, which is really exciting. But I found out about this program probably 5 years ago now. And it's been one of those things on my wish list. Like, I know you've got a wish list of things you want to do for the Heights to bring this program here.
Right.
So we've gotten funding through the Community Foundation and some of our business partners to pilot this mm-hmm. program in Muskegon Heights. We specifically chose Muskegon Heights mm-hmm. because this fits so well into the initiative to try the new Reaching New Muskegon Heights initiative mm-hmm. To really look at how we can better engage our families, our citizens in education and helping to be a part of community change, of investment in their communities. So it takes this the idea of community service, mm-hmm. But it builds literacy skill building into the program. It's like, as I said this morning, it's hard to explain. I can send you a video and you get really excited about it. Mm-hmm. But basically what it does is it helps individuals who participate look at all the assets. Like, I think Muskegon Heights, you know, everyone can name off all the bad statistics, but we want to talk about all the assets that are mm-hmm. there as well. All of the resources that the people who are there may not see in themselves mm-hmm. that can be a part of the rebirth of the city.
Right.
So this program does all of that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's building college and career readiness skills. It's helping mm-hmm. re-engage families in the education system.
Right.
It's been shown to increase literacy levels. So we're going to pilot it for 8 weeks in Muskegon Heights. We're still looking for 3 or 4 more families to participate. And family is a very broad definition. Can be any group that defines themselves as family, foster families, single parents. And they'll meet once a week, work through this program. And at the end, there'll be a service day, which hopefully you'll join us for, celebration mm-hmm. and figure out how we're going to make it last, you know, as a year round thing. And every family will get $100 stipend for participation, as well as some other incentives, gas cards, because we know that's an important thing. We want them to be able to show up. We'll have childcare for the little guys. But I do want to emphasize, any family member from about kindergarten up is welcome to join, and they will be participating in the visioning, in the planning, in the learning, and in the mm-hmm. implementing of this. So it's not the parents do it and the kids sit by the wayside. So
what I really liked from the literature that you provided and looking at that is the emphasis on project-based learning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge advocate of project-based learning, and I was able to see, you know, that work in an environment that I was teaching in and administrating in, and we were able to see a huge increase in literacy and learning and all the other skills, like you said, college and career ready skills, just out of being able to be hands-on and learning in that process. It becomes much more relevant, I think, when you're doing that.
For sure, for sure. And I think, you know, some simple examples are that one of the first things they do is like, look at what the assets are in the community and what some of the hurdles are, things they might like to address. And they do some research. So how to do online research, how to communicate that to, you know, to your fellow participants. How do you have conversation when you disagree? These are all really important skills that are part of literacy. Literacy isn't just about reading. It's important when you get on a job to be able to communicate in positive ways with your coworkers. It's important if you want to see change in your community to be able to show up at a community meeting, whether it's a school, city council, and communicate your ideas clearly in ways that can be received, you know, by other people. So that's all built in. Budgeting is super important. Financial literacy is built in because they'll have to figure out the budget for the project. Public speaking, you know, hopefully they'll be able to come in front of some public groups and talk. So all of it, again, like you said, is based on real hands-on experience. And the cool part is it's multi-generational. So the kids are seeing their parents reinvest in their community. They're seeing their parents reinvest in the whole family. And they're more likely, based on the research for this program, to stay invested in, you know, in community service, in civic life, and running for office, all of those things as part of the long-term outcomes of this program. So to me, it just fits so well with the vision for what Muskegon Heights, you know, needs to be or wants to be. And I also love it because this is the pilot for something we want to spread out throughout the county. And I love that the focus will be on Muskegon Heights. It's also because it's a smaller geographic area and smaller community. It's an easier place to get it started, but we've had a ton of attention. We'll have people coming in from the media, from television and stuff, following this along. So it's a great place to highlight all of the other good things that are happening. We hope we can get businesses involved and hopefully introduce you to some of the families that are going to be leading this and really seed some grassroots leaders that will make a difference.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so you had mentioned that they had done this. This program had been implemented in other areas of the country. Do you recall any of those areas where they've done this?
I sure can. One that's really close by, well, on the other side of the state, is Flint. And some of the videos we have of interviewing the participants and the program like hosts are in Flint. There's a nationwide program or family service learning program that happens on Native American reservations around the country. So very different. You've got the urban, you know, Flint model, and then you have these very rural models without a lot of resources for them to pull from, where they've done some really amazing multi-generational learning programs. So one example is community gardens. Instead of having one community garden that everybody went to, they built community gardens in the front lawns of the elders of the reservations. And the kids would go to those gardens on a weekly basis. They would garden together. They would read. They would, you know, interact and kind of build community and service around that. They've done it in Houston. They've done it in Denver. If you look into the National Center for Families Learning or Google Family Service Learning, you'll find a lot of information. It was just highlighted in Washington, D.C. In the fall as a national model for family literacy and really something that I think a lot of experts believe is important for changing the long-term outcomes, because we're, again, building investment in education and connection to education. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And so when does this kick off?
Well, next Thursday, we are having a dinner for the families who we have recruited to date, just to bring them together for the first time, kind of introduce everything, do some just early visioning. They're going to name the program, like they'll name their cohort.
Okay.
They're going to start
I like
brainstorming that. Some ideas. So, brainstorming some ideas, but the official kickoff will be after spring break week. So that week of April 11th, and then it will run through right about the end of the school year, like the middle of June. And then our hope is we'll take all the evaluation information, and they'll take our evaluation outcomes and compare them against the other communities I was talking about, mm-hmm. but make any adjustments we need to, like any good new program, it's not going to all go perfectly the first time. Mm-hmm. And then,
lessons learned.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Reboot, restart it in, late August or September at the start of school year as a year round, or at least school year long, program. So really mm-hmm. excited. We're still, it's always funding determinant. So we're, writing right. grants, looking for, for businesses and stuff to come on board and help us make this work. But I have full faith that that's not going to be an issue. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else that you want to add before we wrap this up?
One thing I will say is we, mm-hmm. now that COVID is again, hopefully moving on or right. is more manageable. I hate to count on that. But the demand for our services is rising, both for our family services and for adults. Mm-hmm. And we need more volunteers. I think people are sometimes intimidated thinking I can't teach someone else to read, but we provide all of the support and all of the training that you would need. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's one-on-one, or sometimes you can help in a classroom, but what I would love to see is volunteers coming from within the community instead of always bringing volunteers from outside
right.
To help. So if that's something that you're at all interested in, you can find out more information on any of the things we've talked about on our website, which is readmuskegon.org. You can stop by our office right downtown on Broadway when we're open, or call our main office number and we can connect you to the right person.
Do you currently, I know during COVID things shifted, do you have regular hours now?
Yep. So we are, we're still open with our office manager there where the doors open and you can come on in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, mm-hmm. From 9 to 4. And then hopefully by spring, in the next few months, we'll add Thursday, Friday back onto that. I mean, we'll also say we've got big bookshelves right in the front. If you're ever looking for a book, if you have a child who just wants to come in and grab books, those days were open. You're welcome to just pop in and grab some as well.
Great. Great. So for those people who might be interested in helping with the program, tutoring, so to speak, would it be during those hours generally or?
No. So if you want a tutor, we work around the availability of the tutors and the individuals. Like if you were going to do one-on-one, mm-hmm. they meet at all different times. Sometimes okay. during the day they can meet. It has to be in a public place. So that's mm-hmm. our one stipulation. We don't go into people's homes, but we have, amazing libraries with places to study. I know one tutor learner team used to meet in the cafeteria at the hospital because their learner lived across the street and that was an mm-hmm. easy place. So we help find a space. We match up time. Sometimes it's evenings, sometimes it's during the day, depending on work schedules and all of that. So mm-hmm. we really work hard to make a good fit between both the tutor and the learner. And then again, like right. I said, support along the way. And I will also say if anyone has a special interest in working with someone who speaks another language as their native language, mm-hmm. We have seen an increase also in outreach to us for both participation in our class and one-on-one around there. So always mm-hmm. looking for people that you don't have to know another language, but if you do happen to know another language, that's always a bonus for us. So
excellent. Well, I'm glad you covered that because I know some people hesitate thinking that it's only 9 to 5 type of thing and they mm-hmm. don't have time. But with that mm-hmm. flexibility matching up with the needs of the learner, I think you'll find more people might find their way to be involved that way. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And like I said, if you're interested at all, just, give us a call or stop by and we can kind of give you an example or of what it might be like, or have you talked to one of our other newer tutors who's kind of talked through, how the process went for them, just to reassure you that, that you can do it.
Excellent. So can you repeat the phone number again?
Sure. Yep, our phone number is 231-747-7273. And that's our main office landline. So if no one answers, just leave a message. If you want to speak individually to one of our program staff, all of those numbers, everyone's got their own cell phones, are on our website, which is readmuskegon.org. And you can find us all phone numbers and emails there.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining our show. I'm really excited about the things that you're doing today and the program that's on its way. So count me in terms of helping out any way that I can. And I appreciate your offer to volunteer and help out with the Street Fest. So
I am
really excited about this year and where we're going. So thank you for being a key part of that.
It's our pleasure. Like I said, I have loved being part of the Muskegon Heights community. I'm always really proud to host meetings, you know, and have people come down to our space. So thanks for letting us be part of it.
Sure. And you hold down an important part of our Broadway streetscape. So it's nice to have it active and used and for our use like this, which is wonderful for our community. It's fantastic. Thank you for hanging in there with us.
All right. It's our pleasure.
All right. So we will go ahead and move on to our discussion to catch up on houses. And we left off last week with questions around types of houses and how you can get involved. And so I want to remind and reiterate that our objective with the new construction is to make sure that we are creating an opportunity to transition people from renting into home ownership. And so that's why we're building into the program this bridge for down payment assistance, credit repair, and home ownership mentorship. Just like Melissa just mentioned, financial literacy is an important part of that. And so that is a key piece of the bridge that we're building, getting people to understand the value and importance of owning versus renting, and realizing that ownership is not that far, is not outside the reach of most people. And so if you're paying $900, $1,000 a month in rent, we are looking to put people in houses for $700 to $800 a month. With home ownership. So that money that you're paying then goes into the value of your house and not into the pockets of the landlord or into their mortgage company. So this is very intentional about building that bridge. And we expect, as a side benefit of building this bridge, that we will be able to maintain the fiber of our community, that we will give an opportunity for those people who are currently residents of this community to participate in the renaissance that is coming to Muskegon Heights. Because the last thing that we want to have happen is have that renaissance occur, and the people who have put their blood, sweat, and tears in this community are not here to benefit from that renaissance, to participate in that renaissance, to take part in that renaissance. And so we want to make sure that we build a bridge for those people who are part of this community to continue to be part of this community, but in a way that develops wealth for them and creates the opportunity for intergenerational wealth. Because the single most significant factor in terms of your ability to transition wealth from one generation to the next generation is the ownership of property. And that's nationwide. That's not just Muskegon Heights. That's nationwide. And so we need to make sure that we build a bridge for the people who are part of this community to be able to transition into that space for creating their own wealth through the ownership of property and creating the opportunity for intergenerational wealth to be able to pass it on to the next generation through the ownership of property. And around this whole program is a desire to be able to create a continuum of housing opportunities for our entire community. And what I mean by that is that you should be able to grow up in Muskegon Heights, graduate from high school, and And if you want to go to college, great. If you come back from college or don't go to college, that there is a starter home available for you here in Muskegon Heights, and that you'll be able to transition from a starter home to, let's say, you get married and have kids. The size and opportunity, the type of home that will accommodate 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, 5 bedrooms, for you to be able to have access to that next stage in life, if that's the direction that you go here in Muskegon Heights, so that you don't have to go to another community in order to find the right size, the right type of house that fit you. And then also on into the senior years. And so we talk about that in terms of transitioning from cradle to long-term care. We want to be able to provide that whole width of opportunities within Muskegon Heights, so that you can be a Heights Tiger. I think the saying Heights Tiger for life, so that you can be a member of and a resident of this community from beginning to end. And so that is what we're hoping to develop around this new housing program. And so there's multiple benefits that we're trying to achieve here. One is bringing back our tax base, because we can't continue to have a structural deficit. We have to fill in the gaps in these vacant lots and put homes on them, not only because that gets rid of the blight and addresses the dumping and the littering, but it puts property tax into the tax base and income tax into the tax base. And that allows us to be able to provide quality services to the community, such as paving the roads, right? Parks and rec. These are key pieces of our community that contribute to quality of life. We start paving the roads, and that's an impetus for more businesses to come, for retail to come. But we've got to be able to create the tax base to provide the funding for us to be able to do that. And so let me take a quick look at some of the comments here. Will there be designated areas for new homes like Woodcliff? So where we are, thank you for the question, Fran Ward. It's a very good question. So where we are in our community now, we are looking to do what's called infill, which is to go back to all these lots where we've torn down homes. And I'm told prior to me coming here, in the 4 to 5 years, we've torn down somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 homes. And so, and some of that had to happen. I'm guessing some of it probably could have been avoided, but either way, regardless, the challenge that we have is that there were no homes built to replace those homes. We tore down, we left it barren, and we went on to the next one. So our primary focus and task now is to fill in those gaps where we've torn down homes. You've heard me say, and I will continue to say, we have over 1,000 vacant lots in Muskegon Heights, which is both our asset and our liability. It's our asset because in other communities that are now going through transition, they're looking for ways to tear things down to build what people are looking for. The reality is that most people today are not looking for fixer-up homes. They're looking for new, turnkey, move-in, walk-in, ready-to-live homes today. And so other communities are having to tear things down in order to do that. We have a running start because of the number of vacant lots that we have. And those vacant lots are scattered throughout our community. And so we're not, at least in the initial stage of this, going to designate a development area like Woodcliff, where you have all the homes that are built at the same time and in the same time span. What we're doing is we're looking at these vacant lots that are scattered throughout the community and filling those vacant lots. And what that does is it stabilizes streets and blocks. You'll hear the mayor talk about stabilizing the community. This is a big step in being able to stabilize a block, because we fill in these gaps. That helps increase the value of every other house on that street, regardless of whether that house is much more expensive or less expensive of the ones that are on that street. The point is, it fills in a vacant lot. And whether that is a high-priced house or a lower-priced house, that is no longer a vacant lot, which increases the overall value of that entire block. And so we want to be able to buoy each of these blocks and these neighborhoods by filling in these gaps. That's one less place for people to dump. That's one less people for a place for people to leave their trash. It's one less place to be overgrown, waiting on public works, which is undermanned and under-resourced, to come cut it. And I know, and I hear this all the time, why should we cut our grass and why should we clean up our lots if the city doesn't do that with their lots? And I understand that. I mean, that's a valid concern, valid. I don't know if I want to call it a valid argument, because right is right and wrong is wrong. So it shouldn't be about what my neighbor to the left or the right is doing. I still have a responsibility to do what I need to do. But I do understand that sentiment. But I want everybody to understand it's not because the city doesn't want to. It's because the city does not have the money to. And so, because of the structural deficit that we're in, every year our expenses go up. A lot of that is due to retirement costs and pension costs that we have no control over today, that we're still paying for yesterday. Those costs continue to rise. And that's driving a significant portion of our expense increase, but our revenues continue to stay flat. And so, because of that, we don't have the funds to buy the equipment, to hire the staff, to be able to go out there and maintain those vacant lots. So, the best thing for us to do is to put those vacant lots into hands of people who want to build new homes. They take care of the lots. If they don't take care of the lots, then we take the lot back. They have 3 years to build on these lots. So once they start, they have a year to finish. And like I said before, they're required to provide access to down payment assistance programs, credit repair programs, and to offer 1 to 3 years of mentorship. And so that is our plan to start filling in these gaps. Now, once we get the momentum going with filling in those gaps and that process is off and running, then we'll come back and look at ways that we can do planned unit development. One of the primary spots that I think we should be able to get accomplished in the near future is off of Summit and 6th Street, Edgewood. I'm sorry, Lindbergh. That property was a school that was torn down, and there have been a few starts and stops on developing that, but being able to put townhomes on that plot of land, or single family homes on that plot of land, should be something that is doable. And we're currently working with the state on a plan to do something like that, because the state owns that property. So that would be our second phase, so to speak. Not to say that these two things can't work fairly in parallel, but yeah, Glendale Elementary. Thank you for clearing that up, Ms. Bird. I get Glendale and Lindbergh confused in my head for some reason. Those two words always are intertwined in my head. I guess that goes back to my dyslexia for whatever reason, but thank you for clarifying that, Glendale. But the point being is that those two things can run in parallel, but our what we want to get off and running on is building these new single family homes. And we're looking at a price range of 150 to 280 in that range. The second thing that we're trying to focus on is the rehab of existing properties. So the rehab of existing property should allow us to fill that gap between $40,000 and $80,000 for homes. And getting those homes rehabbed and back on the market, and then creating opportunities for people who want to move out of East Park Manor and into homes, whether it be on a initial rental basis and a rent-to-own program that allows them after 5 years to have a ready-made down payment, so that they can be in a position to make that purchase at the end of 5 or 10 years. You know, that those are the types of things that we're moving forward on putting the pieces in place. And I didn't get a chance to mention it while Melissa was on with us, but We are looking to work with Muskegon Heights Business Association and providing opportunities for people who work in Muskegon Heights to get funding towards buying a house in Muskegon Heights. So if you work in Muskegon Heights, we want to make sure that you live in Muskegon Heights. And you may have heard me say before, we have approximately 3,000 jobs in Muskegon Heights, and over 2,800 people commute in for those jobs. So those people, we want to give them an incentive to be living in Muskegon Heights and working in Muskegon Heights. And so we're talking with the members of our business association and those manufacturers and industry leaders in our community about providing a package that says, okay, if you buy a house in Muskegon Heights, you've worked for me for X number of years, we will put $5,000 or $10,000 towards your down payment or closing costs. And if you stay here for as a gainful employee for 5 years or 10 years, depending on how much the down payment is, then that amount is erased, and it is not a debt, it is a gift. And so this is a model that's being used in multiple other communities, and we would like to bring that model here. So with all the other things that we're putting together, the synergy is in being able to layer partnering with our business community to be able to provide that opportunity. See, I don't see any other questions here. So then let me move on to vacant building fees. There, I talked last week about vacant building fees. And so there were some questions that came up as a result of the conversation around vacant building fees. And so let me clarify, that is an annual expense. If you are an owner of a vacant building, whether it's a vacant house or vacant commercial property, if it is vacant, every year that it is vacant, you have to register it as being vacant, and you have to pay a fee to register it. So it's not that you can go 3 or 4 years with it vacant and then pay a one-time charge and be done. No, every year that the property is vacant, you have to register. And every year that you register, there's a fee associated with that. And if you fail to register, then there's a penalty associated with that. And thus far, we have not implemented the penalties. We've only moved forward in collecting the registration fee. And that is to give people a chance to catch up and to address the vacancy. And maybe there's an opportunity based on this vacant building fee for people to now get these buildings up and running instead of just holding on to them and having them sit. And especially, we want to pay attention to the upkeep of these buildings. It's one thing to have a vacant property because you haven't figured out what you got to do with it. You may have an extended family and you have family members that are interested in moving into the area. You know, we get all that, but that's no excuse for it being overgrown with grass. It's no excuse for the paint to be peeling off or the shingles to be falling off of the bricks coming down into the street, or the siding slipping off the sides. So if you're going to have a property that's vacant, you still need to keep it in good working condition, because the rest of the community should not have to look at a rundown vacant property that whoever's owning it is holding it and not doing anything to keep it up. So to answer those questions that I had, the purpose that I understand for the vacant building ordinance is to make sure that we are motivating people to make good use of these properties and not just holding them and having them in disrepair. So I hope that answers that question. And with that, I think we have run out of time here. So I will wrap this up. Thank you so much for tuning in and clicking on for Reaching New Heights with Troy Bell, the City Manager, City of Muskegon Heights. Look forward to you tuning in every week, 2 p.m. Wednesday, for this program, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know. Thanks, and have a blessed day.